stated all that, let me say that I, somewhat like he, by a rear guard action, I believe, as I told the people at the Pentagon yesterday, I believe very strongly that if the United States turns into and quits and backs away from its commitments in Asia and in Europe, that we could do pretty well for a while. But we would be surrounded by, in the end, by both trade and many other areas, by a very a potentially hostile, at best, neutral in the other side of the role. And as far as the Europeans are concerned, and the Japanese, the other side of the world, you and I both know that unless the United States does play a world role, they're going to be living in terror. Right? So, that's what I think. So I'm on your side, you understand. But I think we have to understand we've got a terrific problem. Mm-hmm. And so what we've got to do, those of us who are still thinking in international terms, who are still thinking in terms of European terms, we've got to realize the problem, sell it as well as we can.
Now you're talking about what we can do.
Well, I understand that, Mr. President. Thank you very much for letting me have your thoughts. See, none of it surprises me in view of all that you have done to it and what has happened in terms of the movement of the world.
Europe is going to be mixed up with Japan. I mean, this is a problem. It's a problem larger than Japan.
In Europe, you mean you don't agree?
No, sir.
You don't agree? Well, Japan,
it is an immediate problem.
Because they bore like $4 billion of the $6 billion deficit is a Japanese.
Yes, sir, but we have a $10 billion deficit in our basic balance, and that goes on year after year after year.
Anyway, Mr. President, if I'm...
Go ahead.
I think they are big. I mean, I think Japan is the big problem. Now, how to deal with the islands of the European side, and what can I do? I think that these negotiations are going to enter into a frenzy of wound. Not so much from what's going to come out in trade.
All right, I mean, we'll give a bit here, we'll get an agreement here on this, and on a bit of tariff, on a bit of non-tariff barrier, and on the safeguard clause, we'll be looking together to how we can handle the Japanese situation. They're doing this quietly with ourselves. And out of it will come some trade benefits. But this is nothing compared with the political advantage. Going to come out of it. This is a dialogue, and we're on the bicycle, and we're pedaling along, and we're talking. But we must be very careful, because if it goes wrong, and we don't reach the end of the road, then the political disadvantages would far outweigh any trade advantages. Now, what worried me in my talks yesterday was I got straight from the shoulder, and fine, it's a negotiating position. We've got to get a good deal unilaterally out of the negotiations which are starting on the 1st of March on Article 24.6 of the GATT. We've got to get something on the fact that EFTA countries who are not members of the community have been given free trade area status, and this is going to affect American trade with Europe. When it comes to the multilateral negotiations, then this isn't just something which we've got a give and take on both sides. This is something which has got to come out in American favor so that the big contribution to rectifying the deficit. Now, I just would like to, as a political animal, Mr. President, hoist up just one or two storm signals. First of all, 24-6, fine. I know that Europe put in a thing saying we don't reckon we have anything. And that's the starting point. But, of course, it is that where the United States and indeed all our trading partners are concerned under 24-6, where actual cast-iron propositions are put to us to the effect that we have lost out by virtue of this, by virtue of that, by virtue of the other, each one must be properly examined. And if there is truth in it, they should be met. Now, we've got the whole of the world to think of. It isn't just the United States. As Canada comes into this, as Australia, there's a lot of other countries come into this as well. I'm not saying there's a tremendous lot to give. I'm going to have difficulty in making them give anyhow, making the nine countries agree to give in, because that instinct is going to be to keep everything for the multilateral. But there must be, it must be, everything properly that is properly presented must be properly looked at under 24-6. Where the EFTA negotiations are concerned, here I would, if I may, give a little warning to the effect that I know that Europe is convinced that legally speaking, with where the GATT is concerned, there is nothing wrong that we've done, nothing that requires any compensation under the GATT. But the fact that we have brought with us into Europe a free trade situation that existed between Britain and Austria and Switzerland and Norway, who haven't become members, that we brought with them a free trade situation with us which couldn't be allowed to go backwards. And it is now, we've negotiated so that that should be extended to the community as a whole, and it has to be with Britain inside the community. And we believe that this is legally right. I'm told that the impression I got from the State Department yesterday was that although they didn't say it, they rather wonder whether we aren't right. But that there were other pressures making them go ahead with this. Now, Democrats, either of us, push at doors which can't be opened any more than is necessary, and let's concentrate on pushing at doors that are openable. And I think that the 24-6 is a more fruitful act to follow along rather than the other. Now, the main negotiations are concerned.
1962, there's been very nearly a 50% increase in agricultural imports into Europe. So I don't think that's a bad thing. Then where the industry is concerned, there is a 6.5% tariff, which is not a very, very high tariff. And of course there can be improvements, and there must be improvements, both in tariffs and in non-tariff factors. But I think that the trouble again is that Europe is sort of lost up and mixed up with the Japanese situation, which is a very difficult, different situation. And what I'm frightened of is that if, because of, first of all, the internal need to which you were referring, and secondly, because of the Japanese situation, you find yourself having to, the American administration finds itself having to make noises which are construed in Europe as being protectionist noises, that in order to get the bill through, okay, but it has to be, you know, it has to be dressed up in such a way as to get what is designed to be, as Teddy told me before I left to come here, a liberal bill, a liberalizing bill. But if too many noises have to be, you know, it's a question of the balance here. And if it comes out too much, as if there's just one little paragraph about liberalizing and the rest is all about protecting, this in itself is going to make it difficult. Now, it was agreed, I think, after the Smithsonian Agreement, that there should be this discussion, there should be these negotiations, and the idea should be mutual liberalization of trade. And that is fine. That is fine. What I see my job is that I've got to provide a mandate, put up a draft, a global approach to the Council of Ministers, which has to be politically realistic. I have to do this at the end of March. And to be politically realistic, it has to do, as I see it, two things. It has to be likely to be acceptable in the round by the nine members, and it also has to be something which our trading partners, particularly the United States, sees as a reasonable negotiating position. Hence my reason for coming here, Mr. President, and hence my desire to say that I understand, I see the difficulty, but I think that it should not be put too much. I mean, I was really rather a bit disappointed in the sort of message that I was getting yesterday, which was that, look, we've got this deficit, you've got to put it right. Now, A, I'm not sure about all this fuss about the deficit, in fact, but if it goes on and on and on, and I see that this may create difficulties. But as to who's going to put it right, I don't know, I would have thought, I was talking to Mr. Sonntag just outside before we came in, I would have thought that there are sort of two broad approaches to this. One is the one I had yesterday, which is we've got to deficit, we've got to go on with our defense, we've got to go on with our aid, and therefore you've got to give us and make it possible for us to put our deficit right, turn it into a surplus. That's one approach. The other approach is that the hard fact is that the United States in the immediate post-war years, where it had big surpluses and got accustomed to them, was the one big industrial nation that could export very easily throughout the whole world a whole range of products. Others have now caught up, but others have been very aggressive selling. Others have taken export markets. And it isn't, you know, you don't want to end up just with jumbo jets and with grain and with agricultural produce. I mean, there is a whole range of goods.
You're suggesting we ought to get off our tails and do a little bit more.
Excuse me, Mr. Bell, what I think I'm suggesting is that you want to give it, we've forgotten about exporting. It's been such a small, it's been such a small part of the American economy that you've forgotten about.
The problem there, of course, is that the American market, like a magnet, draws the world and draws our own producers because it's such a good one.
Yeah.
On the other hand, out in this great big world, there are a hell of a lot of other markets, and some of our guys just ought to get out there and find
do my best to get out of the, I promise you, a mandate which should be an acceptable starting point, and I will do my best. But I think we've got to keep a little line there.
Well, let me suggest a couple of points. Take agriculture. Agriculture, a few lemons or whatever the hell we sell over there, isn't going to make that much difference. The problem with agriculture, as I told him, even for us, is that it is the agriculture provides the books that we need to pass the trade.
force them to let them do in their training, in everyone's services, training the lot. And this is what we've got to use the international, the multilateral negotiations for. We've got to absolutely pound them. I mustn't look like a gap, because this is...
I know.
But we've got to ask them, this is the only long-term solution for Japan. We can't do it, we can't answer this defensively. I mean, we can have safeguards and all that, luckily we've got one, and it's going to have a look at what ours is like. And we realize that when you talk about safeguards, it is in fact Japan, you're aiming at that. But Europe, a lot of talk in Europe, thinking that it's Asia, Europe too.
But Europe has done pretty well in keeping Japanese stuff out, much better than we have.
Well, the kind of difference, we've got two oceans between us, and you've only got one. That makes quite a hell of a difference.
That's right.
And secondly, they've been conquering the American market, and they're now turning their attention to the European. But the percentage of rise in European exports to Europe over the last few years has been double what it has been in the United States. They've killed Zeiss in Germany. They've already done that. They've knocked it for a six. They've killed it. In Denmark the other day, they went for some big earth moving equipment and things. They did a market survey. They moved in, and within 18 months, they captured the whole market. They sold 30% under anybody else.